Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So how are you doing, Pamela?
Always lovely seeing you.
Always lovely on a Thursday.
Always lovely on a Thursday.
Because it's the last day of the week for you.
Yeah, bo.
So today we decided to focus on
cover versions.
Yeah. And the reason why, but before we get there, mm-hmm. did you watch the Olympics?
Yes.
How was that Celine Dion performance?
She was amazing.
Yeah.
She was amazing. Is she well? So this is, I was battling between, it's great, great, great. Mm-hmm. And is it greater because she's not well?
Yeah,
she didn't
yeah.
seem well, but she belted it out.
Yeah.
So I was sort of, you know, I was caught in that feeling like, yo, what a professional.
I mean,
consummate professional.
Indeed. After 4 hours of watching the Olympics,
yeah.
I think I had 2 naps in between yeah. and the Olympics were still going
on. So long. Yeah, no. I was exactly like you. There are things I missed that I had to come back to.
Yeah, we had to.
Just because people were saying stuff.
Yeah.
But also, there was a lot going on. So
yeah, there was so much going on.
Some of it you missed, some of it.
Yeah.
Like the.
Yeah, we're not talking about
Sapa.
That. Yeah. But
which is not the Sapa, by the way.
No, it wasn't. And actually, even if it was, what is the problem? Is it people's preconceived notions about things and exclusion of people? I don't know. What is it?
You know you're going to get them started. No?
Anyway, but let's not talk about
you
that.
You know you're going to get them started. Because they're going to be, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, it's insulting.
Yeah.
It was not the Sapa, guys.
No, it wasn't. But anyway, so...
But it doesn't matter that they've apologized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you and I think.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter what they were thinking.
An apology has been...
It doesn't matter what they were thinking.
Yeah.
Oksalai, they've apologized.
Yeah. So the Celine performance was just like watching... So she apparently she isn't well. She's got the stiff person syndrome. Watching the performance felt a bit...
Sure.
For me, like Elvis Presley in 1968 did a big welcome back performance in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Where he was all dressed in black leather and it was a mm-hmm. whole big comeback. He'd been away in the army and then there was like a whole stint of movies and like he'd been away from music for a very long time.
Mm.
And he came back with this big Las Vegas performance. And that... performance on the Eiffel Tower was giving me a bit of that Elvis Presley like moment, and hearing that voice, because I've been doing a deep dive into Celine Dion for the last 3 months.
That will go down in not only her own history, but that will certainly go down as one of her most greatest performances.
Exactly, and just that power and the presence, and it was a Edith Piaf song. So yeah. The interesting thing about that Edith Piaf song is that it's called Hymn to Love.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was that Edith Piaf had this boyfriend who was flying from Paris to New York to go visit Edith Piaf. And in the airplane that he was traveling on, it crashed and he died on his way to go see Edith Piaf. Mm. And she was so devastated by the death of this boyfriend that within 4 or 5 months, she wrote this Hymn d'Amour, which is about this, this boyfriend that passed away. And so it was actually quite a poignant moment standing there watching the performance and thinking it was almost like a resurrection for herself, for Celine Dion as a performer, mm-hmm. and the vantage point, which leads us to what the show is about today, which is the art of the cover version. And you listen to that Celine Dion version of the cover version, she's one of the queens of doing cover versions. She's just like able to reinvent the original composition. But the thing is, the most important thing for me about doing a cover version is there's no point in doing a cover version in the same way that the original artist did it.
Absolutely.
Because then it's just karaoke.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point. The whole point of a cover version is bringing a new story to it. Mm. Like in this example of Celine Dion, the original was about the boyfriend who died in the airplane crash. Da, da, da. In this instance, it's about the rebirth of Celine Dion as a vocalist from a period of darkness and coming into a period of light. And so when you listen to the performance, you feel a whole different emotion and a whole different connection to the song. Mm. And I think oftentimes people just jump on a bandwagon like Prince died. Okay, everyone's doing Prince cover version. Everyone's doing Purple Rain, you know? And it's like, what? Purple Rain? But Prince had a vast, vast repertoire of songs, and now you're going for Purple Rain, you know? So it's a bit weak. Mm. And in order to do justice to the cover version, and the art of the cover version is to elevate the original to another level. So today we're looking at songs that were elevated, that they were taken out and they were made different and made better. And most of the time, and some of the times, if you are able to do a brilliant cover version, it's even bigger than the original. And this one was RJ Benjamin. Yeah. He's a dear friend of mine.
I was going to say, just a wonderful, wonderful human being.
Yeah, and so this song was originally released in 1995 and it was done by a band called Oasis, and Oasis were the hottest thing in 1995. It was between them and Blur, and they had this constant battle between Blur and Oasis, and this song was featured on their album What's the Story, Morning Glory. And the song was huge. It went to number 8 in the US, number 2 in 2 in the UK, and sold over 7 million units. So massive, massive single. The thing is that when RJ decided he was going to do a cover version of this song, not many people had covered it at this point. So it was 2004. He was about to release his first album, Who I Am. And he started playing. He really loved this song. But if you know RJ, he loves all music.
So yes, he does.
Yeah, it's not just
all music.
It's not soul.
Yeah.
It's country, and it's rock, and it's pop, and it's disco, and it's techno. Yeah. He had a techno phase, which I was very surprised about.
Yeah.
And he just loves all different types of music. And when he was started talking about this Wonderwall, I was like, dude, a rock song, like what is it all about? And when you listen to this interpretation of Wonderwall versus the original,
he had a house album.
If you listen to this version, it's completely different. The interpretation, the saxophone line in the music, so it's like a neoclassical, jazzy, soul version of the original.
Mm-hmm.
And it did very well in South Africa. That album landed up winning a Metro FM award. It was nominated for a SAMA award. So the whole spin on the music is completely different and exactly what a cover version should be, which is elevating it to another level.
So we have another song. Can we play another song before we go to the spot? Yes, let's do that. We've got another song. This everybody will recognize. What do you say? What do you say about Thandiswa?
I mean, that voice.
The queen of... I mean, she trumps every song.
Exactly.
That she covers.
And so this specific album was the Belede album, 2016, and it was a covers album. So she did covers by different artists. This was a Leta Mbulu song from 1970 from an album called Leta. It was written by Kaifa Semenya. And actually, I was speaking to a friend of mine today, and I was like, oh, was Leta Mbulu Zulu? And then she was like, no, but Kaifa Semenya would probably have spoken Zulu or back in Zimbabwe, because I think he's originally from Zimbabwe. And so that would have been a language that would have been familiar to him to write in. And so Jiki Jela probably was birthed out of that. But two very different vantage points from which these songs came from. The original by Leta Mbulu was about the political state in South Africa at the time. And the song talks about, you know, throwing stones at the police who were coming in and terrorizing the people in the townships. And then you look at Thandiswa's version, and it's taken from a completely different point of view. And at the time, it was the Fees Must Fall movement and people like standing up for their rights at the time to be represented in education. And so two completely different vantage points and two completely different sounds. And that, to me, is the art of a cover version. Is because a songwriter writes a beautiful piece of music, but it's unidimensional. It's a song on a piece of paper. Mm. That's what it is. But what the artist does, what the singer does, their talent and their creative contribution is bringing that to life and adding their life experience to that specific song, to that arrangement. Mm. And it's not only just the singer, but it's also about the musicians and the producers and the people that work together. And that's why it's really important that when you're working with people in a creative process like that, that there are people that understand your vision as the singer so that they are able to bring to life what it is that you are trying to communicate. And that is the gift, and that's why Tandiswa is so successful at what she does, because it's that interpretation. It's bringing that life experience. It's about elevating. It's about using the melodies to express the message of the song. And that's what elevates a cover version to the next level.
Now, the next artist needs no introduction, right?
The Queen of Soul.
Sheldon, thank you so much for staying with us, and thank you for listening. Those of you who are listening to this wonderful conversation brought to us by Sheldon. So, Miss Aretha.
Yeah, the Queen of Soul. So, one of the big things, the cover version really became popular in the 1950s, and mainly because at the birth of rock and roll in 1955, many of the musicians that were making music were not formally trained musicians. They were young kids, and that was the whole thing about rock and roll. For the first time in music history, the kids were making music for the kids. And so they didn't know how to compose music, and so they relied heavily on cover versions. A lot of like blues cover versions, etc. Now, so Aretha Franklin herself she had a huge repertoire, but only really wrote about five of her big hits. The rest were all either cover versions or songs that were commissioned specifically for her. So it was always about finding that song. Like, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman was a song that was written for her by Carole King, who wrote the song for her. And then later on, she herself had a hit with the song, but the original was the Aretha Franklin version. But anyway, so this song, Respect, was originally released in 1965, and it was written, written by a guy called Otis Redding. And Otis Redding was really, really popular amongst blues and R&B and soul music fans in the 1960s. But this song was actually not even written by him. It was a song that was brought to him. He then sped up the tempo, changed the lyrics, took full credit for the song. And then Aretha heard about the song, and she performed the song a lot on tour. But her and her sisters, Carol and I forgot what the name of the other, and Erna, they decided that they were going to recompose the lyrics because they wanted to perform the song, but more from a female protest, feminist kind of perspective. And when you hear like Aretha Franklin's interpretation of the song, you can hear the power and her owning the song and saying, this is a feminist anthem. I don't need your money. I don't need anything. I can pay for my own cars. I can pay for my own things. And so you can hear the complete different interpretation of the song. But and then Aretha also, she had a very specific idea of what she wanted to achieve. And so she sat with her producer, Arif Mardin, and the two of them rearranged the song. And even in the recording, Aretha Franklin played the piano, but she seldomly recorded whilst playing. But she actually played on this, and she instructed the band exactly what she wanted to be played, the accents, the everything in the music. So she was very forceful about what she actually wanted to communicate. And Aretha always said, there's no point in doing a song if you don't feel it. Mm. If you don't feel it, then don't bother. You're wasting your time. Mm. And so that's the Queen of Soul.
And then this one, again, needs no introduction, Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey, another queen actually this song was her first cover version. Yeah. Up to that point, Mariah is known as a songwriter. Mm. So she's one of the only, she's had 19 number one hits. Mm. She's written most of the 19 number ones. So as opposed to Aretha, who relied heavily on cover versions of songs written for her, Mariah is known for writing her own music. Mm. And then she did this MTV Unplugged album, which was all the rage in the 1990s. Everybody was doing Unplugged albums. Lauryn Hill did Unplugged. Maxwell did Unplugged. Rod Stewart, you know, everybody was doing Unplugged albums. Mariah did the Unplugged. And so the whole concept of Unplugged was that you would go on and you would do all your big hits, but and then with very minimal instrumentation, no sound effects on the voices, like just very, very stripped down. And then she heard that everybody that did Unplugged did a cover version. And she was like, what am I going to do? And she was a really big fan of Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5. And so she did this cover version of I'll Be There. Mm-hmm. I'll Be There was the last number one hit that the Jackson 5 had.
Yes.
So they came out very hot. Their first four singles were number ones in the US. Mm-hmm. And it was like no one had ever done that. Mm. No one had released their first four singles and gone to number one. Mm. And ironically, Mariah Carey beat the record in the early 90s when her first five singles went to number one. So it's quite apt that her first cover version would be by this band that she had just conquered. Mm-hmm. And so she did this version of I'll Be There, which wasn't as successful as the original, but it was also a number one. Mm. So the original was a number one hit, and it was massive. It 6 million units sold worldwide. Sure. But Mariah's version was also a number one for 2 weeks, but her version is done more as a duet with her backing vocalist, Trey Lorenz. And if you listen to the song, the amazing notes, the bell notes that are hit in this composition are not by Mariah. It's by Trey Lorenz.
Sure.
Yeah, Mariah. Mariah just makes me happy. Like, I remember going to watch her perform here when she was in South Africa, and I was like, someone was like, but she's miming. I was like, I don't care if she's miming. She was just standing there. She was just standing there. She must be carried from one side of the stage to the other because she doesn't dance either.
She doesn't do anything.
No, she doesn't have to do anything. She's Mariah Carey.
Can she still belt out stuff?
Well, I mean, you can hear, like, there's still something there.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously as you age...
No,
you
all I know right now is that she's just Queen Mariah.
Oh, yeah, she's Queen Mariah. Like, she gets defrosted once a year for Christmas.
Yes, that's it.
And then she gets put back into the closet for another year, like your Christmas and decorations.
When she comes out with all kinds of diamonds all over her.
I love it.
The bling.
The carrots are dripping.
Yes.
Only one other male vocalist that I know of that can hit those notes, and it's a guy called Michael Speaks. And I don't know if anyone remembers Michael Speaks from the 1990s, but that guy, he looked like Mike Tyson.
Yes.
But he had this voice like Mariah Carey. Like, it's I don't know what the deal was, but I mean, this guy was amazing. And Trey Lorenz, which was he was like a protege of Mariah Carey. So you can hear it in the singing.
So we're gonna go out with like a banger.
Oh my goodness.
A big star.
Queen Dynamite.
Yeah, no, this
double
is
T.
This is it.
Tina Turner.
Yeah.
So her biggest hit, well, I mean, she had many big hits like Private Dancer, What's Love Got to Do with It, Proud Mary, River Deep, Mountain High. But the song that people probably most associate with Tina Turner is a cover version. And the song is The Best. Mm. And it was released originally in 1988 by a Welsh singer called Bonnie Tyler. Mm-hmm. And people were... I love Bonnie Tyler. She's got this rough, husky voice. Oh, she's amazing. But people just didn't pick up on the song. It was like not a thing. Mm. And so Tina Turner then heard about the song. It actually was supposed to be recorded originally by a guy called Paul Young. Mm-hmm. Every time you go away. But anyway, he didn't want to record it. And so Bonnie Tyler recorded it, and then Tina Turner decided that she was going to do the song, and it became so closely associated with Tina Turner. Mm. She slowed down the beats. Mm. You can hear like the vocal interpretation. It became like one of the most iconic songs in music history. Mm-hmm. And it was like 30 years into her career to have such a banger. at such a late stage in her career.
Well, that's how we play out. And thank you, Sheldon. Thank you very much for this wonderful treat.
Thank you.
And we'll be back on Monday at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.